get in the habit of not wearing it if I'm going to be preaching or teaching. But anyway, as I said, this topic is something that's been for quite a while I've been looking at. And the topic is God's punishment of nations. Now, this topic came up several weeks ago in some of Tom's studies as we were looking at the children of Israel. And looking at the fact that the children of Israel were being told by the prophets that because of their sin, they were going to be taken into captivity if they did not change. And then they were told, because of their sin and they hadn't changed, they were definitely going to be taken into captivity and they were going to suffer greatly. And then the people of Judah, God's people, the last of the nations left that were the descendants of Abraham, were told that if they did not change, they would be taken into captivity. And then they were told that they were, regardless of what happened at that point, because they had gone too far. And the topic then of God's punishment of nations was certainly a centerpiece of that study that Tom was conducting on Wednesday evenings. And he made reference a few times to the nations of the world today, and for that matter, he made reference to the United States being subject to God's wrath, being subject to God's punishment as a people, as a nation. And we had a brother who was visiting with us. Back in those times, he was frequently here on Wednesday night. I haven't seen him for a little while. But he was here at that time, and he came up after class, and he was talking to Tom about it. What makes you think that the United States is subject to punishment, or these other nations might be? And listening to that question got me thinking on the subject, and I started looking these things up. Some of the passages that dealt with it, and this was quite some time ago. Although it is something that is certainly fitting with things that have recently happened, it is not based on things that have recently happened. God's punishment of nations. Now, to give this a proper study, it would require several weeks of sermons, or at least a couple of weeks of sermons. Somebody might say, well, Joel, we know you as a general rule, if whatever you're going to look at is going to take a couple of weeks of sermons. But no, it would. It really would, because we would want to look at the idea of God's, the law planted in the hearts of man. Is there or is there not a law separate and apart from the law of Moses, or the down through time, law of Christ, something that was planted in the heart of man that is an ongoing right or wrong or an evil? We would want to look at divine providence to see to what degree divine providence plays into things. It was mentioned this morning about the fact that, as tragic as the incident was last week, that the people that were shot in that particular case would not have been shot had they not been in a bar late on Saturday night. And that is indeed true enough, and this is not to take away from the things that were said in the sermon this morning, but understand this. You will pick up the paper tomorrow if you read the paper. And if you look through the small stories, once you get into the metro section, you will find that there were many people shot in this region this last weekend. And you will find that by far and away, most of them were shot at bars or outside of bars. I have, in the course of my professional life, been to many bar fights. I have seen people beaten with pool cues, cut with knives, cut with broken bottles, people shot. But you know, I've never been to a bar fight that wasn't at a bar. And so certain actions in individual life. Now, I mention this because the same thing is true for nations. Oftentimes, the things that a nation will do will inherently bring about certain results. Now, we know God talked about the fact in the Old Testament through the prophets that he was going to destroy Assyria, that they had sinned greatly, and but also bear in mind that when Assyria was overcome by the Babylonians and the Medes, they hated the Assyrians so much because of their cruelty that they took Nineveh, plowed it under, and planted it with salt so that no human could ever live there again. And this was based on the cruelty of Nineveh. So nations' actions have consequences, sometimes even maybe separate and apart for what God individually or specifically is going to do and the action that he will take on it. But I want to move on with it right now, and we want to notice that while all these things are true, that there are things that just happen. And there are certain actions that nations do that by the course of nature can lead to great punishment for that nation, great sorrow for that nation. Still, we find that there are biblical principles that are involved in oftentimes in the destruction or the punishment or the great sorrows of nations. Proverbs 14:34 said, righteousness exalts a nation. Righteousness exalts. It's not talking about unrighteousness there, but it does point out that a people who do the things that are right in the eyes of God, that place is exalted. But we also know, and we can also find that God understands, sadly, he understands that man is basically sinful. And God has long tolerated this sin on earth, and he does tolerate this sin on earth. Were God to smite all nations in which sin is prevalent, we would pretty well be able to travel around the world without having to worry about running into any more people. So we can find in Genesis, in chapter 8, following the flood, in verse 21, the Lord smelled a sweet savor. The Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake. Now look what he says, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite every living thing that I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest and cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Now, just in the course of those things happening, summer and winter, day and night, you're looking at the seasons, you look at the rain, there's going to be times when some nation is going to suffer flooding. There's going to be time when some nation is going to suffer drought from heat and shifting climate, just from the way the winds move. So these normal things will bring about sometimes sorrow for nations, but God says, I'm not going to anymore smite mankind, because he recognizes, sadly, man is full of sin. And he has made a plan in the end for the salvation of the remnant, those that will turn to him through Christ, and the rest of mankind will, at the time when the earth is destroyed, will face their eternal punishment. So that's how he's going to work at this time. So he's not just destroying every sinful people, because he says, basically, they're all sinful. There's sin everywhere. That's just the way man is. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 45, we are told that we are to let our love shine upon all people, so that we would be like children of our Father, who lets the sun shine on the just and on the unjust, and the rain to fall on the just and on the unjust. And so it is that both the just and the unjust have the rain to grow their crops. They have the sun to shine to grow their crops. These things come and go, and God allows these things to happen. The good benefit from it. The sinners also benefit from it. We all benefit from it. God lets these things go on. But even bearing that in mind, we have many examples of God's punishment of nations. Even though he says, I'm going to let the rain fall on the just and the unjust, even though God said that I recognize man as his evil, so I'm not going to destroy mankind, there are many examples of nations being punished or even being destroyed. There are certain characteristics that separate out sometimes some of those nations that are going to face that punishment, that are going to face that destruction. But the first thing I want us to understand is regarding the nation, regarding Israel, not the current Israel, not the Israel that we now have, but the Israel of olden times, the people that God brought out of Egypt, brought into Canaan, gave them Canaan. Understand, when it came to their punishment or to their blessing, it was an extraordinary situation. It does not apply overall to mankind in general. For one thing, they were told that if they were faithful, that their animals would bear their young without mishap. And anybody that, some of you folks have been involved in farming and such over the years, and you know many times, there will be some animal that the calf is being born wrong and the calf ends up dying, or these things happen. But they were told, oh, your animals are going to bear, and they're going to be fruitful. Your crops will grow. They were even promised that if you are faithful, you men, when it comes time to make your yearly visit down to the tabernacle to offer your sacrifices, don't worry about your wives and kids at home. God will personally protect them and make sure nobody bothers the house. This was extraordinary. But at the same time, they were given a set of laws, and they were told, you're going to receive these laws, and these are pretty strict, and I'm not putting these on the other people around you, but you're going to get all these blessings if you obey them. Do you agree to go by them? And they, first of all, to Moses, then to Joshua, said, oh yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. So there was things that they could do that were counted as sin that would not have been counted as sin for other people. For example, a man living in Nineveh did not have any obligation to go down to the tabernacle and to make a yearly sacrifice. That wouldn't be held against him. That wouldn't be counted against him. There were a lot of other things that would not have been, the other peoples would not have been held accountable for, that they were. So, in looking at the punishment of nations, let's separate out and look at Israel separate. And we're going to move on then to overall to other nations and other places. Now, we also can find that there are various examples of other nations receiving some sort of punishment or receiving some sort of woe specifically because of their interaction with Israel. But there's one thing I want us to understand about this first. When that happened, we can look at that nation and we can understand that based on the criteria set out by God for all nations, for people, they were potentially due punishment. If God chose to allow them to go on and receive the rain, receive the sun, He can do that. But since they were due punishment because they were sinful people, then action could be taken and would be taken against them. And examples that we might see. We come over here that sometimes a nation would be punished as an example for the Israelites, to help the Israelites to try to be more faithful as they went forward and did the things that they were supposed to do. We can go to Exodus in chapter 9. We're going back and we're dealing with with Pharaoh and the things that they were looking at with Pharaoh. Look at this in chapter 9, verse 13. And the Lord said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, thus saith the Lord of Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For while but this time send all my plagues upon thine heart, upon thy servants, upon thy people, that thou mayest know that there is none like unto me upon this earth. It was to show God's power to Pharaoh, and it showed it to the Hebrews. Now let's look at this situation. These people are going to suffer terribly. We lose track of how much the Egyptians suffered until you go back and look at it closely. Not only did all the firstborn die, but many others died as well before that. But certainly the animals in the field were destroyed. They were wiped out almost completely. We had the things killing off. We had all the various plagues. Talks about killing off all the animals out in the fields. The animals they worked with. The river that grew their crop turned to blood and wasn't working with them. They weren't going to, and their crops were all destroyed. By the time the Hebrews were released, Egypt had been pretty close to being destroyed. It was pretty close to being totally destroyed. And then they send their army after the Hebrews, and their army is wiped out. They would not have been able to be a power for some time after that. Nor would they have even been able to properly defend themselves. It made such an impact upon this, you'll not hear the archaeologists say that had anything to do with it, but a generation or two after the time that that happened with Moses, the Egyptian Pharaoh changed the religion of Egypt so that they would worship only one god. Unfortunately, he was thought the sun god. But he moved his capital, and he made change the rules so that a Pharaoh and an Egyptian man was no longer to be judged just based on what a warrior he was. That he was looking at righteousness and worship and things like that. This had a major impact upon the Egyptians, almost destroyed the nation. But understand this, the Pharaoh considered himself to be a god. Called himself a god. That Pharaoh and the Pharaohs thereafter and the people accepted and recognized Pharaoh as God. And in Exodus chapter 5 verse 2, Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." He is challenging God to his face. He's a god, I'm a god. Who is he that I should have to listen to him? So we have direct opposition to God. And we have also then, like we just read about in chapter 9, showing God's power. They had been sinners before, and they were going to be sinners again in a few generations. So they were due and subject to punishment, but they were selected out because at that time and place, God could use them for his purpose. To do those things that he wanted to do, to accomplish those things that he wanted to accomplish. Chapter 7, verses 4 and 5, "Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt, bring forth mine armies, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt with great judgments, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt and bring out the children of Israel upon them." And by the time they were let go, we can read that Pharaoh's advisors are saying, "Let them go. We can't beat this God." So these were an arrogant people, the most powerful nation upon the world. And not only were they the most powerful nation and arrogant people, but they took God's people that they had in bondage and they doubled the bondage against them. They made it all the harder for them. And then they exalted themselves against God. And God, for showing his power, and for fighting those who were in direct opposition. Now, we can go to chapter 10 of Exodus, and go to verse 1. "And the Lord said to Moses, Go into Pharaoh, and I have hardened his heart, that his heart of thy servants, that I might show these signs before him." Now look at verse 2. Look at verse 2 here. This was for an example for Israel, to help them over the years. "That thou mayest tell in the ears of thy son and of thy son's son, what things I have wrought in Egypt and the signs that I have done among them, that ye may know that I am the Lord." Now, 400 years later, we find the psalmist frequently writing about those things that were done by God to Egypt. This was a proof to the Hebrews down through the centuries down to the time of Christ, that God had been with him. So this nation was punished. They were due punishment. They were idolaters and practiced all type and manner of sin. But they were punished where in prior times they had been let go, and later times they would be. In this case here, God could use them as a tool to teach his people, and thereby also to teach us, and to teach those who would come along. When you think about it, why did Rahab the harlot help the spies? Because she had heard what happened at the river, at the Red Sea. And she knew there was no way to stand, that God was going to win, and you couldn't stand against him. So they were used as a tool, and they were used to teach God's people. But let's continue on down the line here and look at these things as we move on from there. I want to look at some different criteria. I want to look at some generalities. The first big example we have in the Bible of a nation being punished is, we can go back to Genesis in chapter 18, and we see Sodom and Gomorrah and the things that were, that happened there. And 18 verse 21, and God talking to Abraham, "I will go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it that came up to me, and then I will know." So they're going down. They'd heard that Sodom and Gomorrah were so terrible and so sinful, and they were going to go down and check and see. Now in chapter 19, verse 13, we find this. After they went there and they saw how bad it actually was, "For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the God, the Lord has sent us to destroy it." What? They were worse than the other people around them. Whatever they were so bad that although all of man sinned, they were singled out. And this is going to give us kind of a little clue as we go on a little further and see some of the things that are happening. We don't know what all their sins were. We know what one of the major sins was, and that was they wanted the angels to come out of Lot's house so that they could have sexual relations with him. We're looking at not only homosexuality, but we're looking at their intention was to attack and molest the angels who were seen as men. Now we know, of course, now it is said by the Right Reverend Dr. So-and-so's with the white collars who teach the theology at the universities that their sin was clearly, obviously, could not have been homosexuality, since that's not bad. Their sin was they lacked hospitality. They were not accepting of strangers. The angels came to town, and they did not welcome the angels properly. And that's what they say now. That's how they see it. But we can clearly see from looking at this at least one of their great sins. And this kind of leads us up to something. I'm going to move on here because we have little time to be able to go into all of this. It tells us much. We can further look at this, at certain nations being due punishment and sometimes some being singled out, when we look at Canaan being given to the Hebrews. And in all the times I have studied this, including some recent studies, I never really thought about this or noticed this particular thing before. Always focusing on other facets, always focusing on other things. Look at Leviticus chapter 18, go down to verse 22. We see this long list of sins here. We see this last links to sins in chapter 18. We're talking about adultery. We're talking about incest. We're talking about homosexuality. We're talking about the sacrificing of one's children to the altars, burning their children as burnt sacrifices. We're talking about all of these things, bestiality, and all of these things. Now, verse 24, look at this. Defile not yourselves in any of these things, for in all these things the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you. The land is defiled, therefore I do visit the iniquity upon it. The land vomiteth out her inhabitants. You see what he's telling the Hebrews here? They are being thrown out of this land because they practice these sins and they have defiled the land. Now, here's a key. There are sins and there are things people can do. But there are things that God says defile a land. He had this big long list here. You can go back and read it. Just before this verse, they have defiled the land, therefore the land vomits them out. We go down the line and continue to look at this in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 27. For all these abominations of the men of the land done, which were before you, the land is defiled. Let the land spew not you out also, when you defile it, as it spewed out the nations before you. For whoever shall commit any of these abominations, even the souls that commit them, shall be cut off from among the people. See what he says here? To keep the land from being defiled again by you, cut off, remove those people that commit these things. Otherwise, you can also defile the land and receive the same punishment. We're looking at two key elements here. What singles out a nation above other nations for punishment here? Although maybe all the nations might do them. But this makes a nation subject to punishment. One is doing those things that defile the land, according to God, and those things that are abominations. What is an abomination? An abomination literally means a vile thing, something that God, in God's eyes, is a vile thing. Now, notice this. That will not change based upon the law of the time. If something is vile in God's eyes, it's not going to then, under a new law, suddenly, it's not based on law. It's based on the fact that it's vile in God's eyes. That's not going to change as time goes on. And that's not going to change from place to place. If it's vile in God's eyes, a vile thing, it's a vile thing in God's eyes. Not based on the fact that, like he had given the law of Moses. You know, there's a lot of things God laid out in the law of Moses that they had to do. But those things were not things that are called vile or an abomination in God's eyes. I'm going to move on down the line further here. Hebrews got the land. And this is something that we easily can lose track. Like I said, you know, I really hadn't even singled out these verses when we even studied this recently. And we were studying this in California just before we moved out here. And I really didn't note these things and single them out. All I saw was they're telling the Hebrews, don't do these things. But it didn't really dawn on me that, well, he's saying that they're lost the land because of these things. Go to Deuteronomy in chapter 9. Start of verse 3. Understand, therefore, this day that the Lord thy God is he that goeth over before thee as a consuming fire. He shall destroy them. Talking about the Canaanites. They're getting ready to cross into Canaan. He shall destroy them as a consuming fire. He shall bring them down before thy face, so that thou shalt drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord hath said unto thee. Speak not in thy heart after that the Lord God has cast them out before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me to possess this land. But for the wickedness of the nations, God has driven them out before thee. Not for thy righteousness, for the uprightness of their heart, dost thou go to possess the land. But for the wickedness of the nations, the Lord God drove out before you. that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto his father Abraham. Look at verse 6. Understand, therefore, the Lord of God has not given this land to thee to possess for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. In other words, you're a sorry bunch. I'm not giving this land to you because you're so good. I'm taking it from them because they have defiled it with abominations. So don't get in that land and say, oh, we're special. God gave us this land. No, remember, think of it from this point of view. God didn't give you this land because you're so much better. God drove them out because they were so bad. And you got it. But what was it? Those things that defile and those things that were listed as abominations. Time is quickly ending, so I will not even have a chance to read the various passages. But let me give you a list of things that are listed in the Old Testament as abominations in God's eyes. Now, certainly we can go back and look at that passage that we looked at a while ago. I didn't actually read that whole list of things that he talked about, but it included, like I said, incest, it included bestiality, it included homosexuality, it included sacrificing your children, it included various other things. Now, let's look at a list we find in various places. I'll give you some passages. Oh, I will not have time to read them. Graven images and false gods. Deuteronomy chapter 7 verse 26, Deuteronomy 17 verses 2 through 7, Deuteronomy 27 verse 15, Deuteronomy 32 verses 16 through 17. Not just saying don't do it, but saying in effect it is an abomination or that it defiles the land. It defiles the land. Now, you will have in every nation those who worship false gods. When David was the king of Israel, and he had this wonderful, he brought the ark back to Jerusalem, he brought it to Jerusalem, and the nation was worshiping God. Understand this, the archaeologists can tell you that Israel was full of houses that had their hidden images, had their idols. They were secretly, as long as they can get away with it, a lot of the people worshiping idols. But it did not dominate the nation. It was not accepted officially. It was not held at such a level to where it was given equal footing with God. But it was there. But it happened. But these things can defile a nation. Well, when could it defile a nation? When it's the prominent or dominant thing in a nation. When the nation accepts it. That's how defile a nation. Come down the line. Human sacrifice, which was practiced, by the way, for most of the ancient cultures, and this is, by the way, one of the proofs that you have the same evil force behind the ancient religions, wherever it might be, because the one thing that was always required was human sacrifice. Sorcery and witchcraft, either listed as abomination or something that defiles the land. There was always sorcery and witchcraft. Saul outlawed witchcraft. Then when the time came that he wanted to talk to Samuel, he had the guys look up somebody, because these guys were in hiding. They were still there, but they weren't out open. They weren't accepted by the nation. They didn't, it wasn't part of the culture of the nation. So the nation was not being punished for the abomination. But there was there. But then you get to the point to where it has got to, it gets to the point to where it is accepted, to where it is widespread, to where it is supported publicly and socially. It becomes part of the nation. Sexual immorality, specifically homosexuality. Go back to human sacrifice. Deuteronomy 12, 31 through 32. Sorcery and witchcraft. Deuteronomy 18, verses 9 through 12. sexuality, homosexuality, Deuteronomy 23:17 through 18, not to mention the passage that we read earlier as we were moving into this area here, when we're seeing that the people were being driven out. Leviticus chapter 18, starting at verse 22, we find a homosexuality listed there. Now, homosexuality has always been in every nation. But it is not always in every nation accepted as a mainstay or a major part of an accepted part of the culture and officially supported. But that's one of the things that is God considers an abomination that can defile a nation. Here's something. Becky was mentioning this a few weeks ago. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 5. For the person to wear the clothes of the opposite sex. Basically, we're talking about transgender. A man who wants to be a woman who wants to be a man. Wearing the clothes. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 5. It's called an abomination. This no doubt happens, and oftentimes has. There was a major public official who was the major law enforcement officer in this entire nation, who was highly regarded and honored from the 1930s through the 1970s. And then after his death, they found out that he and his good friends would gather in houses, put on their little pink tutus, and dance around. But it had to be in private. But when the time comes that they can put on their pink tutus and dance down the street in a pride parade, now at that point it is accepted as part of the nation. False weights and fraud. There's always crooks out there, but when the government, when the leaders of the people, and when it is prevalent within the society to cheat and to defraud each other, and especially the poor, that's an abomination that defiles the land. Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16. Fraud, just in general. Proverbs chapter 20, verses 10 through 23. And yet injustice, when the officials are all corrupt and oppress, it defiles the nation and is an abomination. Amos chapter 4, verses 1 through 2. Amos chapter 5, verses 11 through 12. It defiles the land. Something I came across a few years ago that was very interesting, and Pastor mentioned it, and Tom used it in a sermon here a couple of weeks ago. The shedding of innocent blood, Numbers chapter 35, verses 30 through 34. Murder, in which the murderer is not punished by capital punishment. God said that the shedding of blood in Numbers... Now, he's not using the phrase, and this is one of the laws. Do this, do this. Yeah, it was part of the law. But then he added something he didn't add in a lot of the other places. You know, he didn't add this when he says, now if somebody steals your cow, this guy now owes you so many cows. He didn't add this then. But he added it here that it defiles the land. And the only way that that can be taken away is if the blood of the one that does it is shed. That is in Numbers chapter 35, verses 30 through 34. So what do we see when we look at this? God understands that man is basically sinful. And God, until the time of the judgment day, for the most part, tolerates it. There are times for his purposes to protect his people that God takes certain actions against other nations. There are times when, for an example, God takes action against other nations. But also, there is a principle laid out that those nations that we know specifically of in the Old Testament, some of them that were destroyed, It was because of doing things that God said were abominations that defile a land. So that land is now defiled. The land now rejects its inhabitants. And in those cases, sometimes we find that even goes beyond the other. God can take action. And God does take action. Now, God is long-suffering. And we can go and we can look at the example. Someone said, well, does this mean that we look what's going on in America while we can expect God's retribution tomorrow? No. You know, you look at the Amalek, they were told after the time, during the time of Moses, God's going to war against them and their memory is going to be removed from the earth. That didn't happen until 400 years later under Saul. God does things in his own time, in his own way. We can look at some of these other nations. God, in Revelations, was talking about all these things that were going to happen to Rome for what they were doing to the Christians. Those things happened 400 years later. So no, we don't know when God acts. Sometimes we don't even know when something is an act of God, or just those things in the course of nature. But what we do know is that those lands that are sinful are subject to God's punishment. And when and how he chooses to against a particular land. Take that. That's God's option. But they are subject to it. The only way to be taken off that list that is subject to it is righteousness exalts a nation. If the overall atmosphere, if the overall culture, if the overall standard rejects those things that are called abominations and is righteous, righteousness exalts a nation. Well, there's been nothing said tonight to tell us anything about the plan of salvation, but I believe most everybody here is aware that we are to understand, we are to hear, we are to believe, we are to repent, we are to be baptized, but we also understand that we have the opportunity and the option as Christians of going to God in prayer if we have any sins or any problems that we have to deal with. And we have that opportunity now as together we would stand and sing the song.